Welcome. I think we have a great show this week. It's all about Prism. It's one of the hottest topics out there, and deservedly so. It's pretty cool. This week, we interview Patterns and Practices team members David Hill and Bob Brumfield. I say we because Sean Wildermuth was also there. He asked a couple of questions, and he also answers a couple of questions.
So there's two things that the event aggregator really tries to help with, and one of those is to keep those things decoupled so that you don't actually have to go try to find another object and subscribe to their specific event, right? We give you a way to decouple these two events by defining an event that is, you might have the pricing change event in there, and you can have multiple publishers of that event and potentially multiple subscribers. Mm-hmm. So this event would typically live in this infrastructure project. You still have to have some shared bit of information between the two. That is the event itself. But you don't know specifically who's publishing it, and you don't know how many people are subscribing to it. It also helps handle the issue of worrying of decoupling the lifetime, because it doesn't. You can sign up for this, and by default, you subscribe to this in what I call a pseudo-week way. Mm-hmm. It's not really a week reference from a .NET perspective. It is a week reference to .NET perspective, but there's no such thing as a week event or a week delegate in .NET. So we had to kind of create our own. I call it a pseudo week delegate mm-hmm. or pseudo week event. And so what we do is we don't maintain a hard reference to the subscribers. So if it goes out of scope, it can be garbage collected as soon as it goes out of scope, effectively. And so this eventing mechanism allows you to decouple those things and help make a little more sense of your lifetime and not forget to say unsubscribe from an event and leave yourself with a memory leak in your application.
We have this rich eventing model now, okay, but there's a price to pay for everything, and I would argue for eventing that the price to pay is in debugging, right? So now I look at the call stack and it's not what I expected, right? You know, it's a little bit like, you know, WM paint message comes in from the ether. Who generated what? So, first of all, would you agree that debugging becomes a little more difficult with events?
I probably. I think anywhere you start decoupling things, mm-hmm. and having something else hook them up magically, mm-hmm. It becomes a little harder to debug, right? So I would say it's about the same level of hardness, or maybe even less hard, but when you get dependency injection involved, that's hard. Right. To figure this out, when you get event aggregator in, it may be hard to debug some of those things as well, because you don't know if somebody subscribed or somebody didn't subscribe, and where did the event go when I fired it. Mm-hmm. We did try to solve some of those problems compared to CAB, because in CAB, lots of these connections were string-based, and if you just forgot the string, you didn't know that you did something wrong. So one of the reasons we have the event model we do is we try to make it tied to a strongly typed event, so that when you compile, you at least know that you didn't subscribe to the wrong substring, at least in that way. Right.
So now there's going to be some build time checks against that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, the answer really there is to stop looking at your stack trace. Clearly.
Don't write buggy code.
What's wrong with printf debugging?
But I was thrilled to find out the first time I used the aggregator that I could register for an event without anyone having had published it. Yep. So that I didn't have to worry about lifetime at all. Mm. If I subscribed to it and someone then published later, I would still get it. There wasn't this having to maintain that lifetime stuff at all, which was always the difficult part. Any .NET developer who's been around at least 5 years has built an event aggregator to try to do these kind of decoupled events. But managing that stuff was always difficult. Either, you know, everyone built it with strings, and like you were talking about, is that, you know, it, for the most part, just worked. And this becomes... Again, if I keep on bringing up Silverlight, that's kind of my bent. It becomes really important in Silverlight because of the asynchronous pulling of those apps across the wire. You have no idea what order they're being pulled in as a developer, and you don't know how long it's going to be between when I subscribe here, you know.
But that can give rise to bugs, right? Because I don't know. I'm going to start screaming at the top of my lungs that a particular button has been clicked, right? So how do I, you know, make sure that module has been loaded? I mean, I'm not saying there aren't ways around that.
You can test against that and wait. I mean, there are ways to find that information. What's important is that in many cases, because you're bundling them all in the beginning, you don't have to care that this one happens to be loaded 2 seconds after this one.
Right.
Go ahead and run my initialization code, which may be subscribing to the event, knowing that if this one got loaded a little later, who cares? We're not talking about minutes or clicks. Usually that stuff is happening before the user notices.
Right, right. There's a little bit of leeway then.
Yeah.
Now, if you're saying there's a dependency between those modules, you can handle that through modularity, right? You can you can set a dependency and say this module has to load before this module. But how do you track down the problems? It's not necessarily easy, right?
Yeah, because what that can cause the circular dependency problem, right?
Right.
They depend on each other. Who do I load first? Mm-hmm. And this kind of
breaks that.
Yeah.
Nice.
Thanks for listening. If you're interested in Silverlight 2 or Silverlight 3, go ahead and check out our website, silverbaylabs.org. That's our company where we do consulting and mentoring services for both Silverlight 2 and Silverlight 3. If you're interested in Silverlight training, see the Silverlight Tour, where I'm also an instructor.